So today we shall try to learn about positive living, and positive living starts with positive thinking. You first have to think positive before you can live a positive life. And what do we mean by positive living? Who is a person that is said to be positive? It is said that one who is happy, enthusiastic, cheerful, and able to handle life's problems and maintain his cheerful attitude is said to be a positive individual, is said to be a positive person. And so how can we bring that attitude in our life, and how can we live constantly? Because life is never the same. You know, one day there are ups and then there are downs, and then somebody is, you know, things are going well and then they are not going well, and then somebody praises me and somebody criticizes me. But how can I, through all these ups and downs, maintain a positive attitude, which we find in the lives of saints and prophets and great teachers? We find they are able to maintain that. And why are we not? And what is lacking? And how can we also try to do that? So this is a brief talk, and maybe some of these points definitely we can apply. So the first one is to broaden your vision. Broaden your vision. Because what do we mean by my vision? Because at this moment, I think myself to be this limited individuality. I'm a Neil, I'm a physician, I'm a male, I belong to Bakersfield. So I limit myself. And I limit myself as just within this body. And then within this body, I have a mind, I have an intellect. And so that is who I am, and that is where I'm stuck. And that's what we call as a perceiver, feeler, and thinker, or what in spirituality is called the ego. So this ego limits me to who I am. And as long as I think myself to be this limited being, then that will limit my thinking. And I will only think about myself, maybe at the most my family, maybe about my church, and that's about it. Beyond that, most of us don't think. So they say that instead of thinking myself to be this limited individuality, think of myself as being the infinite self, the consciousness, because that is who I really am. And this consciousness or divinity, that is God's presence in me, is actually my true nature. This body, mind, and intellect is an equipment that I use to function in the world, with the body to act, with the mind to feel, with the intellect to think. And once I identify myself and say that I am this consciousness, it widens my vision dramatically. Because when I am that consciousness, I am that divinity, so is everybody else. And right away, I develop a kinship with everybody. In fact, at the highest level, they are all me. Everybody is me, because when I am that consciousness, and there is only one consciousness, there is only one God, one divinity. And when there is one consciousness, one God, one divinity everywhere, and I am that, then how can I be separate from everybody else? And when we say I am that, it does not mean that I become arrogant, that I am divine, and that everybody else is not. When I am divine, so is everybody else. So is even the criminal, so is even the dog, even that ant that is crawling. Everything has that spark of divinity. So you have to widen your vision of life beyond just me, myself, my family, and I. And so that is the first essential step to thinking positive. Because if you limit yourself, then there is all these problems of mine and his, and mine and hers, and my success and their success, and my failure and my property and my achievements. And then that's when the negativity comes, that's when the competition comes, that's when the hatred and anger and jealousy and separation comes. So the first step is to remove this little ego, this I, and broaden your vision. The second they say is practice solitude. And they say, well, that doesn't seem to fit. How can I develop a positive attitude by practicing solitude? in solitude, I'm all lonely by myself, you know, sitting and doing nothing. And it doesn't seem like. So there's a very beautiful story I heard. The founder of our mission, his name is Swami Chinmayananda. When he was a student, he had actually gone to the Himalayas to study under a very famous guru, a famous teacher. And this guru, whose name was Swami Tapovanam, his quality was that he remained in silence, in solitude, up in the Himalayas, in a small little, like a hermitage. Even though he knew a lot, he said, I'm not going to travel and go out and give lectures and talk. If somebody wants to learn, let them come to me. And so he stayed in his wisdom, in his solitude. And people used to go and sit with his at his feet, and somebody would go for a week, somebody would go for a month, somebody would go for years. And our founder, Swami Chinmayananda, actually spent several years learning from him. And one day this guru tells the student, who later on became the Swami, but the student, he says, you know, one of my old disciples is coming to see me, who hasn't seen me in many years. And he was quite excited because this particular disciple was very dear to him. And this disciple came, he was about 70 or 72 years old, and he looked very down. So the guru, the teacher, asked him, why are you down? And he says, I'm worried about my grandson. You know, he's about 20 or 22, and I'm worried about him. So he said, why? He says, you know, he was such a promising child, but now, since he went to college, all he does is smoke, drinks, has all kind of bad habits, stays out till 2, 3, 4 in the morning, is, you know, barely goes to college, doesn't even study, sleeps till noon and 1 o'clock, and he's just wasting his life. And when we try to talk to him, he's so hostile and so angry, and, you know, so I'm worried. So the Swami says, okay, tomorrow when you come, bring him. You know, he had brought him with him, but he had left him in the hotel. He said, bring him when you come. So this boy comes. And when we approach a Swami, a guru, we always bow down, we take off our shoes outside, you know, as a mark of respect. And this boy had his shoes on, he didn't even bother to look at the Swami, sat in one corner looking very angry. You know how youth are, everybody knows. And he didn't want to be there. And the guru ignored him for a while and kept on talking to everybody else. And after a while, he called that young boy. He said, come, I'd like to talk to you. So everybody left, and he, you know, and the boy thought that I'm going to get a lecture, you know, how I should improve and all. So the guru didn't talk to him. He says, come and sit down. Tell me about how's things going, you know, how's your school, how's your college? And tell me, what movies have you watched recently? Have you seen any movies? So he talked to him about movies. He talked to him about sports, you know, how is the Indian team doing? And, you know, and how's your college? And are they teaching you anything? He said, no, they don't teach me anything in college. It's just a waste of my time. And so he just developed confidence, talked to him for about half an hour. And he says, look, I'm not going to give you a lecture. For me, just do one thing. So he says, what? He says, just wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And is there a park near your house? He said, yeah. He says, walk to the park, sit for 10 minutes and go back home. He said, 5 o'clock, sometime I don't go to bed till 3. So he says, doesn't matter. Get up at 5, set an alarm, go to the park, come back, and then after that you can go back to sleep. You can sleep till noon, 1 o'clock. Nobody will say anything. But just do that for me for 10 minutes. Okay, I'll humor this guy, you know, whatever. So he does that. He sets up an alarm, starts going. And after 2 months, after he went back to his city, the grandfather wrote a letter to the guru and said that this boy has changed. He's changed. He's going to school. He has given up his bad habits. And this, the student, the Swami Chinmayananda, who was the student of the guru, wondered how can, you know, in 2 months, a sudden change. So it so happened after a few months, he was visiting the same city where that boy and his grandfather lived. So he went there and looked up this boy and said, how are you doing? He said, I'm doing very well. I'm studying. He said, how did you change? What was the miraculous change in you? So he says, you know, that guru told me to get up at 5. So the first day I got up, I went. And I sat for 10 minutes. And I found that it was very peaceful. You know, it was a nice summer day. It was still, you know, the sun was rising. It was cool, but very pleasant. And the birds were chirping. And I felt so good. I had not ever had that experience in my life. But after 10 minutes, I went back. And then second day, I was actually looking forward to going to that same experience. And next day, I stayed for 20 minutes. And every day, I started enjoying the experience more and more. But then after a week, one day, I found it boring. And I said, why am I coming every day, wasting my time, losing my sleep? But then he says, in that silence, a thought came to me. You know, what a nice boy I was. As a child, I was so good. When I was in elementary school, I was doing so good in my classes. And what kind of an individual I have become. I smoke, I drink, I, you know, do all the bad things. And he says, and that got me thinking. And that's when I decided to change my life and to rediscover that little child that I was and how I used to make my parents proud. And so he says, that's when I decided to change my life. So what they say is that solitude has a lot of power. If you can just spend 10 minutes in some very peaceful place, it could be your backyard, you know, if you have, you know, some trees sit under it, or if you can go to Hart Park, that is the place I recommend. It's very beautiful with the river and the trees. Or any park, even, you know, this, you know, I mean, there's so many beautiful parks we have in Bakersfield, or even in your own backyard. But just spend 10 minutes early morning when the sun is rising. Just sit and do nothing and be one with nature. And you will find that your heart will fill with positive emotions, positive ideas, because you will discover that inner silence, that inner truth. Because nature, in nature, you are closest to God. Because in nature, the God's presence can be felt uncontaminated. When you meet other people or in other situations, there is always some vasana, some desire, some selfishness. So that's why they say when you see nature, you see the sun rising or the trees or the birds, you are closest. Then it says, do your duty. Do what you are supposed to do. And one might say, what is my duty? So they say your duty depends on your situation. There is an individual duty, and then there is a collective duty. Now, what is my individual duty? It says it depends on the level where you are, like a student. A student has a particular duty to study, do well in her grades or his grades, pass the exam, and prepare himself or herself for a career. A mother has different duties. A father has different duties. A child has different duties towards the parents. The mother has duties towards the husband, the children, her parents. As an officer in a company or in a bank or an engineer or a professional or a doctor, I have certain duties. As a member of society, I have certain duties. But I also have duties to myself for my own upliftment, to make myself a better individual. And they say your number one duty to yourself is spiritual evolution. You have to evolve spiritually and become a better person. And my main duty to society is how can I make other people improve along with me, my family members, my community, my... So I have duties to myself and I have duties to my community, and I have to perform them to the best of my ability. Talking about duty, there was a mother whose three children didn't listen to her and didn't do what she said. So the father said, I need to fix this problem. So one day he brought a bag of sweets and he tells the three children, you know what, I have this bag of sweets. Would you like them? He said, yeah. He said, okay, I'll give this bag of sweets to the one who listens to mommy, does what she says, and never talks back. He said, what? He says, you have to listen to mommy, do what she says, and never talk back. Now, who do you think will get this who do you think will get this bag of candy? So they all said, you will. So do your duty, whatever you're supposed to do, do it cheerfully, do it without complaint. Don't do it as a suffering, as a punishment, but cheerfully that I have been assigned this station by the Lord. So I do my best to make myself better and make this world a better place. And this fits with the other one, that what is my duty? To work for a higher cause. Majority of us think of me, myself, and my family. Yeah, that is my duty. I have to provide for my family, but I should not limit my activities. I have to broaden my horizon. The broader your horizon, the more successful you are. We find that people who only work for their families gets very limited, but then they work for the company. You know, that's better. But even there, they're still being paid. But then when you work for your church or work for your community or work for your city or work for your nation, you know, like these senators and congressmen, then their action can affect millions of people. You know, what kind of bills they pass and what kind of laws they make. So the broader your cause, the more wider is your action. And the more glorious is your action. And that's why we find that these prophets, why were they so glorious? Because they never worked for a particular group or a particular community. Christ never said that I want to start a movement called Christianity. No, all he did was give his teachings to the world. Whoever wants can take them. It is only his followers who later on said, you know, we are Christians, we belong to Christ. And then even among Christians, now we have so many, you know, Protestants and Catholics and evangelists and Mormons. Buddha never said, I want to start a creed called Buddhism. No, Buddha just gave the teachings. It is afterwards his followers who then, not that there is anything wrong with having divisions, but one should not limit that the truth only is among Christians or among Buddhists or among Hindus or among Muslims. So be like the prophets. Widen your horizon. The higher the cause, the broader is your actions. Then they say, surrender your actions to God. And that is, in my mind, very, very important, because whenever we do something, we have this sense of ego, of being the doer. I did it. You know, anything that goes well, if it wasn't for me, this would not have happened. And so the moment this I comes, then there is all the other negativities, arrogance and pride and then jealousy and then greed and then, you know, competition. And so they say that be like an instrument, that I am an instrument in the hands of the Lord. So they say, do not be a writer, be a pen. One is a person becomes a writer and says, I write. Otherwise say, I'm not a writer, I'm a pen. And somebody else is the writer. So whatever I write, whatever I speak, whatever I do, whatever I accomplish, whatever successes I have, if I dedicate them to the Lord and surrender all my activities to Him and say that, oh Lord, You are the one who is doing everything, then it reduces my ego, then it reduces my arrogance, it reduces my pride, because ultimately everything is being done by Him and Him alone. Whatever my abilities, my ability to speak, my ability to think, my ability to work, everything comes from Him. What did I create? Did I create anything of my own? No. Even all my knowledge came from my teachers, came from the books, and I didn't write the books. So having that understanding, even if I set up an industry or a business, there are so many people who participated in that. There are so many workers who are working in my office. There are so many employees. So in reality, again, does not mean that I should make myself a doormat, that I am nobody. That's not the point. But the point is that when you are successful, give credit to the Lord. And if you are not successful, you say, okay, Lord, I did not do what is right. I did not do enough. I should do better. I should work harder. And accept the results. And that goes to the next one. Number 6, gracious acceptance. Because in life, you may have successes and you may have failures. As I said, when things are successful, you give the credit to the Lord. But the point is that while I am doing the action, I do the action to the best of my ability. I do my best. It does not mean that if I say God is the doer, I am not the doer. I am not working hard enough. I do the best. I work hard. But at the end, whatever result comes, I accept it gracefully. I accept it cheerfully. I accept it without complaint. In Sanskrit, they call it the prasad buddhi. Like when you say, when you go to the church or the temple, doesn't the priest give you, like in the church, they give you some bread and, you know, things like that. Or when we come to the Hindu temple, they give us some sweet. And you cheerfully accept that as the Lord's gift. And then you don't complain and say, why did I get less and why did he get more or why did she get more? I just cheerfully get what I have and I'm happily. So in life also, whatever I get, I accept it as his grace. I accept it as what I deserve. Like if there are 8 people running in a race, not everybody can be first. Somebody will be first, somebody will be 7th. Somebody will be 8th, depending on their abilities, depending on their training, depending on how they have performed that day. So understanding that the result of the action is not in my hand, it depends on a lot of other factors. And that is what we teach in the Bhagavad Gita in the chapter 3. So they say, do your best and leave the rest to him. I have done my best, and then whatever result I get, I cheerfully accept. And if I didn't succeed, then I work harder. Then I try harder next time. It does not mean that I don't try my best. But at the end of the day or at the end of the week or at the end of the year, when I look back and say, this is what I got, I cheerfully accept it as the Lord's grace, as the Lord's. And they say that how can you develop that attitude by remembering that what I have is his gift to me. Everything that I possess is his gift to me. And what I do with what I have is my gift to him. So when I do my best, I work hard, then my service becomes a service of the Lord, becomes a gift of to the Lord, becomes. And when I am helping others or when I am serving the world, I do not have this attitude of superiority or of service. But that, O Lord, it is you who is there everywhere in all these creatures and all these beings. And when I serve them, I am serving my dear Almighty Lord who has given me everything. And with that attitude, even if your activities for some reason are not successful, you are okay. You say, yeah, I did my best. It was not meant to be. You know, that's fine. Next time I will try harder. So cheerful and gracious acceptance, the results of the action. And the 7th and the last is, one must enjoy life. We are so fortunate. You know, we have this human body. We have this human intelligence. We have this ability to think, to function. We live in this, you know, beautiful, great country where you're free to talk and you're free to criticize even the president. You're free to practice your religion. I mean, this kind of a building, we could not have built it in a Muslim country. You know, we could not have been having an idol of Krishna. And we should always be happy that we have this, all these things that we have been given. And they say that how can you enjoy life? By practicing positive values. A person who is loving, who is compassionate, who is kind, who is cheerful, who serves others, who cheerfully gives of himself or herself their time, their money, their efforts, their love, their compassion. Once you start sharing, you get it twice as much back. You know, whenever you do anything good for anybody, you get so much more back in return, because ultimately one has to realize that I am not an island. I cannot live myself and be happy. I cannot be happy if the world around me is unhappy. So a wise person looks that everybody's happiness is my happiness. When I'm making other people happy, I am becoming. And that's what happens when you find that you help somebody and you see that gratitude or that, you know, that joy in that person's eyes. It doubles your joy. It doubles your... And the Lord very clearly says that those who serve me and take care of me and take care of my beings, then it becomes my duty to take care of them. He says, yoga kshemam vahamyaham. People say, oh, if I, you know, give away my things, who will take care of me? I need money for my retirement. I have to care about myself. But if we find in the lives of these prophets, they didn't care. You know, their idea was to serve the world. And then the Lord himself came. And we find that again and again, if you read the lives of saints, how the Lord himself comes again and again to serve these people, take care of them. So they say, if you want to enjoy life, practice the positive values. And once you practice these values, love, compassion, cheerfulness, charity, then your life will be filled with joy. So, 7 steps to positive living. Broaden your vision. Go beyond your limited body, mind, and intellect. Remember, you are that consciousness. Practice solitude. Do your duty. Work for a higher cause, not only as myself, but the ability to sync my differences and work with others. Surrender your actions. Remember, you are not the doer. Accept the results and enjoy life. Practice values. I think these 7 steps are most beautifully are given in detail in the Bhagavad Gita, which we are doing on Sunday. But I just thought I would summarize some of the points.